Hey everyone.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is session 4. This is Michael, one of your co-instructors, on the phone, and I believe I have Phil here with me. Is that right? Are you here, Phil? Phil will be joining us in just 1 minute. Until then, tonight we are going to do something a little bit different. Our guest for the night, Victoria Hill, could not make it due to a last-minute cancellation. So in the main action tonight is we are actually going to go over some of the 100-word concept sketches that students have posted on Bookmito. And a second later thing in the series tonight is we're going to have Professor Alzerwald answer some questions about one of his readings from the first night on creating social value and defining entrepreneurship. And for just a couple minutes, I actually want to go over some of the changes in the course that we saw today. I emailed out the entire listserv, and we've made two big changes in the course. One is that there's no longer group work through the semester, so all work is now individual work. The syllabus has been changed to reflect this. The group project, that is, you were going to find a team and work in teams of 2 or 3 to do a group presentation. That's no longer an assignment. One other change is that we've added groups on the Bookmito. And this is different than group work. These groups are now your peer-to-peer feedback assessments. So you're going to post all of your assignments on the Bookmito in the group you've been assigned to. If you have not been assigned to a group, look on Bookmito. There are now 9 groups around interest areas, such as microfinance, entrepreneurship and development, technology and networks, and so on. Get into a group and post your first assignment, which is the 100-word concept sketch that we're going to talk about tonight. We're making these changes partially because as I said in the email, we are taking the Lean Startup methodology seriously. We've been speaking with a lot of you, exchanging emails with a lot of you, and your feedback is very important, so we encourage you to continue to give us feedback on little things from the sign on Bookmito to the syllabus, and so we'll implement this. Let me see. So are you on the line? Not here. So let's see if he's on the line now. So, are you there? All right, well, we'll continue on and we'll get him on in just a minute. So, for those of you in front of a computer, I want you to get in front of Bookmito and we're going to go through some of these concept sketches. So it looks like many of you have understood the assignment. You've been pitching everything from 100 to some of us with a few hundred words on here. And we are going to, in just a couple minutes, choose a couple of these and discuss them. And when we discuss them, what we're going to do is we're going to answer 2 questions through Twitter. We're going to take a couple callers. And the 2 questions that either on Twitter or the callers are going to respond to is, one, we're going to comment on this particular post, this 100-word concept, and say one thing you like about the concept. And then the second question you're going to respond to is, have you thought of ... fill in the blank? Thank you. Hey, Phil, are you on the line now? Phil, are you there? All right, I'm having some technical difficulties. Bear with us one more minute, and we're going to have Phil leave this section in just a minute. All right, I think we are back on. Did I get a tweet to confirm? So, are you on?
Yeah, you're on. Yep. I hear you. All right, folks. We've got a little bit of a situation here that we're trying to manage. Victoria Hale just called into us, her assistant just called into us, that she is sick and not able to join us. So unfortunately, that's caused a little bit of a scramble. We're starting late because we were hoping to bring somebody else online. We had invited John Seeley Brown and John Hagel. They're apparently at the Aspen Institute Festival. Or an Aspen Institute event, and we just haven't been able to get through to them. So I apologize for starting late, but what we were hoping to do was to bring somebody else in as a substitute for Victoria Hale. So we have another plan for you tonight. Michael, you're there, and I'm getting some tweets here that we're rolling. Is that
everybody rolling.
Out there?
Yep,
yeah.
You're out there. We're rolling.
Okay, good. Yeah, well, I mean, one thing that we haven't been able to do so much with, guests appearing is have a conversation. We can do this, through the call-in, or we could do this through tweets. Again, I'm sorry for not giving you guys more notice. We could have structured this, but we just got the word that Victoria wasn't going to be able to join us. I will tell you that one thing that caused us a little bit of a setback was I ran into Michael Kramer just 15 minutes before class was starting and was hoping that he could dial in. Michael, you'll read about Michael Kramer in Chapter 2 of my book. Michael is a development professor at Harvard and probably the most authority on the economics of the sorts of things that Victoria was doing. So when we talk about power of pull and serendipity, it's a great example. And it seemed as though it was serendipity about to work in our favor. Michael on a future call. He had to get on a plane, so we were not able to get him this evening. So let me describe to you what. Let me describe to you what Michael and I have proposed as the activity for tonight. Many of you have posted your 100 words or your brief summaries of the ventures you have in mind. So we're going to pick a few of those at random, starting at about 8 p.m. And we're going to invite you to do a very specific thing. We're going to read them out, and we're going to invite you all to offer thoughts of this structure. Have you thought about, and then blank. So you're going to hear the concept, and your comment, we're inviting comments of a particular form, which is that, after we kind of read the particular concept, that you could offer your suggestion as to what might be an elaboration. So calls. Discussion of the creating social value reading, or if anybody has been reading ahead and has read some of my book, I'd be happy to discuss that with you. So why don't you guys, those of you who have the ability to dial in, the number is 347-945-5608. 347-945-5608. Of course, that's +1. And if you go to the Blog Talk Radio site, you can Skype in. We haven't done any live calls from the folks in the class yet, so this would be a good chance for us to try that out. And, you know, anything is fair game. Michael sent sort of an update as to what the expectations are, you know, for the course. Just to sort of reiterate on that point, I think that everybody's been sort of clear about the readings. Doesn't seem like anybody's been having difficulty accessing the materials. And we've been getting some feedback on, you know, what people have been reading. We definitely encourage you to, as you know, many of you have, to post at Booknito your observations on the readings, in addition to sort of other comments that you're making. If you want to sort of offer some comments about that would be great. The other thing that we could talk about, of course, is the assignments. We've removed the group assignment, and we're going to be really focusing on just sort of looking at who's engaged in the course, who is offering comments on other people's ideas, and the sort of originality, creativity, of inventiveness of the proposals you're coming up with yourselves. As far as having a certificate in the course, everybody who participates regularly and shows a real commitment, Sandy's noticing that I'm out of breath. Yeah, I've been traveling. I just got in from the airport, so I am a little bit out of breath. And that's where I saw Michael Kramer. As far as those of you who are concerned about the certificate aspect of the course and what the expectations are, we're going to be tracking that on Booknito. We're also, noting the folks who are regular contributors on Twitter. The only thing we can know about your engagement in the course is what we see. So you could be very involved in the course on your own, but if we don't see that on Booknito or in terms of your engagement on Twitter, then we're not going to be able to assess that. So it is a kind of a bounded approach in terms of what we're looking at. But everybody who's a participant, everybody who's a contributor, will be able to get a certificate in the course. Beyond that, we are going to be encouraging people to post their ventures and start some good. And there are going to be other opportunities to sort of take what you're doing in this class to the next level. So we'll be looking for those as well. Anyhow, sorry for droning on a bit here. We have this sort of leftover housekeeping that we really never quite accomplished because we just sort of had one guest after another. So we do have this little bit of space in the next sort of 10 minutes ago or so, and we could extend it out if we get calls or tweets.
I have a caller I'm about to bring in. It's Heidi. She's
okay.
One of the students online.
Yep.
And she posted a 100-word, oops, a little bit longer, short story on her concept today that I found, particularly interesting, especially told through the lens of a story. Heidi, are you there on with us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hey, Heidi.
Can you hear
good.
Me?
You're on.
Hey, yes. Great. Perfect. Okay, so we have our first actual caller who's not one of us on the line. Great.
So, Heidi, you told a story here, and if everybody can log into Booknito, it was posted about 52 minutes ago, so it's up near the top. And my first question to you, is, before I even tell you to describe the story, if you don't mind me asking, is this a story about yourself?
Loosely, yes. Yes than loosely. It's, I guess some of the great innovations are inspired by situations you're in personally. So, yeah, this is a pretty close to real depiction of me.
Absolutely. For those who aren't on Booknito, can I put you on the spot and ask you to, just describe, the short story that you gave and a little bit about your concept that you're going to develop in the course?
Yeah. Is it okay if I read it?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. So it is a short story. It's a woman of 40 years of age living in downtown Toronto. She is a divorced mother of an 8-year-old girl who attends the public school around the corner from her house. She works full-time, travels often for business purposes, is completing a graduate degree, and involved in a number of other projects. Her extended family live 40 minutes away. A neighbor provides before and after school care for her daughter. Her ex-husband shares a flexible care schedule with her, and two neighborhood parents are on call in case of an emergency need, and extended family members are backup on-call caregivers for more serious needs. With great difficulty, she has built a village of people around her to help her care for her daughter and care for herself. Due to many societal dynamics, the traditional village is facing threat of extinction, and yet the village plays a critical role in facilitating the healthy, safe, actualized development of children and their parents. So how might we recreate the village in today's environment systematically and simply to meet the needs of children, their parents, and communities today? And so what it is a recreation of the village, a means, likely technological, to systematically and efficiently facilitate the building and managing of trustworthy, intimate village connections in localized areas. And then I have a few parameters that I've already considered that I could share as well. But that's sort of the gist of it.
Yep, that's great. You use the word village.
Mm-hmm.
Why in particular did you choose this word, and is this a word that you want to keep into your concept?
I think so. I think the thing is that when I use the word village, the traditional village, well, to be honest, it actually probably was inspired by the Hillary Clinton book, which is called It Takes a Village. So maybe without me even realizing that, that's why I always referred to the village as long as I've known. But it just seems to me that when you think conceptually and traditionally of the village was by not even by design, but by fluke, a self-sustaining, supportive ecosystem of people with diverse needs and capabilities and competencies that just naturally seemed to function, probably unnaturally in some ways, or maybe dysfunctionally in some ways, but. To me, you say village and you get the idea naturally of what it means to be supportive, ecosystem, self-sustaining.
Yep.
And I guess there's something nice also about the meaning that's embedded in it that's older, even though we don't live really in an environment of a village anymore.
Yep. In your opening paragraph, I assume here you kind of describe yourself a little bit, that you work full-time, you travel often for business. And then you say you're involved in a number of other projects.
Mm-hmm.
Is this project that you described here, is this a brand new thought you've had recently, or is this something that you've been working on to recreate the village for some time now?
Well, it's net new. It was actually a conversation that I have a number of little similar little things that I do, but the notion of recreating the village only came up probably about 10 days ago when I was sitting down with two other women who live in my neighborhood who are in similar circumstances to me, and we were talking about these elaborate systems that we had in place to take care of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the comment came up, someone said, well, that we don't have the... Well, to be frank, actually, what the other women were saying was that, well, it's because the old days are gone, and so we can't get that back again.
Yep.
And so I said, well, then I thought to myself, well, maybe there is a way then to recreate it.
Yep. So would you consider, your customer, and I kind of put quotes around customer, depending on how you would serve them, let's say women with children, would it be particularly divorced women? Would you kind of describe, who you would serve and provide the service to?
Well, I think in my mind, the idea is bigger than probably what it could ever really be, because I actually don't see it as being a product that's only suitable for a certain type of person or a certain type of lifestyle. I think in an ideal world, it would be all the members of the village in all their different shapes and sizes and all their different lifestyles and so on and so forth should be able to participate in some sort of one of the thoughts I had is that it should sort of almost be trade-based in some way. And so every single person in every single village, no matter of life stage or lifestyle, should be able to be a part of this and benefit from some systematic way to establish it.
Mm-hmm. The first question on Twitter is, unsurprisingly, do you have a Twitter handle if people want to tweet to you? Are you on Twitter?
Oh,
are you on Twitter,
do.
Heidi?
I do. Yeah, yeah. It's really difficult to remember. It's my name exactly. It's Heidi McCullough.
Do you want to give a shout out in a few minutes to AshokiU Online? Hashtag AshokiU Online.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I can multitask that well. There, I think someone's got my spelling there, actually. Can you tweet my idea, please? Yeah,
look.
I can see it there.
On Twitter, if anybody has, based on this concept, have you thought of, dot, 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 fill in that blank and tweet, Heidi, have you thought of this?
Yeah, there's one there now.
Advice. Oh, you're on there before I am. What do you see there?
It's campus, E-N-T-R-E. And that's actually because I only sort of put language around this idea this morning because I had this random conversation 10 days ago with these two women and didn't really think too much of it and then captured it this morning. And that was the immediate next thought I had was to create something visual, something pictorial about it. I'm so frustrated lately because I can't draw or work any graphic design programs, but that's the next thing I'd like to do for sure. The visual map will reveal all the complexity, but at the same time bring clarity through the process.
Great. And that's that was from Campus Entrepreneur, one of our co-instructors, David Miller, actually.
Okay.
There was another good here's a good question. Just tweet it now. Heidi, have you thought of how to start building trust in the village? You know, keyword trust.
It's a big part of it. I have three parameters that I think are really going to be really, really important to make this happen. The first one is that it's customizable to users' individual needs. The second one is about the trust factor because I believe it has to function in a technological way because that offers us efficiency and coordination and instantaneousness and stuff like that. But the big part of it is going to be to give people what I'm saying is the opportunity to verify, test, or try on the elements of their village network because it's just so personal. I mean, who do I want to be on backup emergency care for my daughter? Who the person that feels right for me may be completely different than the person that feels right for somebody else. So that physical try-on opportunity would be a big part of building that in.
Yep, yep. And a great follow-up question just came in. And before I ask the question, if anybody's read, you know, the Lean Startup a little bit, I think this is a great question to, you know, demonstrate the methodology in Lean Startup. And so the question's from CJ, and she asks, you mentioned you're speaking to other women already on this. What are their thoughts, you know, especially around this trust issue? You know, can you get, you know, women to, you know, trust, you know, at first they may be strangers to, you know, watch children or, you know, other activities that, you know, services that you provide. So have you, what are these women telling you?
Well, it's only two.
And
I know for sure that the trust, the opportunity to, yeah, again, to test, try on, validate, and build trust will be critical. And again, I can only have the conversation in the context of my immediate world, but in my immediate world, there's already a sense that when you come into a neighborhood, whether that be a neighborhood of 10,000 or a neighborhood of 400,000, when you come into some sort of a neighborhood, there's already at least the opportunity that this is going to be a place where you can find some sorts of connections. So I think that it's just a case, and the thing is that these connections do exist. Every person that I know within neighborhoods has these connections that they have with some difficulty sought out and formed independently. I think all I'm talking about doing is facilitating that process for people, not changing it, just facilitating it.
No, that's really great because I agree with you that in every neighborhood you move into, you know, there's the relationship capital and the human capital that's already there that we don't know about exists, and it's a matter of, you know, having a platform to find it and to work with it. As a note, I think there have been two or three people so far tweeting in that they will help you with visual mapping. speaking of relational capital, there are all types of people in this course that come from all types of different backgrounds. You know, some may be great at market research, others may be great, you know, in IT. And that's, you know, one great thing we're trying to do in this course is allowing people to connect over a platform like Twitter or Bookmeet.
Cool.
Let me go.
Michael, I wanted to there was one tweet about seniors and about the role that this village could play in terms of senior care for seniors. So any thoughts about that?
I just saw that. And it's so interesting how things come together. For a separate project today, I learned a story about a senior in my neighborhood who goes by the name the mayor, considers himself to be the mayor. He's been here for most of his life, which is 5 decades, and he watches. His job, he believes, is to watch the community. And it just I just thought it was amazing because part of what I'm trying to understand is whether there is an opportunity to better connect generations to each other within when they live within small geographic areas and close to each other, but they don't connect. And so the quick answer is I think it could be tremendously helpful.
So I want to make sure we give other folks a chance if we can, Michael. So why don't you check the lines while I continue this discussion with Heidi.
I will.
You know, Heidi, it's been a busy day today. I went to visit this farmer outside of Kansas City this morning. He's doing the most amazing stuff. I'll have to talk about that later on, but it's just incredible community building and thinking about alternative models of agriculture for the future. But I don't want to take time with that. Right after that, I had a call with a group of folks about mobile medicine. And, you know, this is a venture capitalist and then a group from the Grutter Institute of Law Economics, and they're really interested in sort of the regulatory context for kind of creating the next American economy. And you know, it's so interesting to hear your proposal in the context of that discussion, because this is all about sort of disruptive innovation in healthcare and how are we going to sort of provide the healthcare, particularly for veterans and for seniors, you know, in the next 20 years that our veterans deserve and that our seniors have to get at a lower cost than we're providing it. Otherwise, we're going to have serious fiscal problems in the United States. But you know, it was all the kind of level of, you know, technological disruption and Schumpeterian innovation. And what you're doing is kind of bringing in the real heart of the matter around how we mobilize our communities so that we can care for each other. So I know that was like a kind of a roundabout way to get to my question, but you're talking about using you know, a platform to build the community. Have you thought about you know, how technology can help this community actually deliver services to one another in new and different ways that would make it, you know, an even more powerful community? Or is that not so much the direction?
I'm certainly not saying it's not the direction. I don't know. I think, there's probably the opportunity there. I know it wasn't really in my mind. It was in my mind to use it as a platform to facilitate the physical connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a personal limitation that I have. I feel like I always am pretty good about understanding how to use technology at a real high level, and then I'm not really very good about figuring out how to use it at a more tactical level.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, we have, like as Michael was saying, we have all kinds of talents and capabilities, including a student here at George Mason, whose Twitter handle I'll tweet out in just a moment, Lauren Myers. She has been working on a concept about, you know, building sort of peer relationships among moms in particular, but, you know, these kind of trusted care networks focused on moms. But I think that, you know, you guys might have something to talk about as well. So thanks for sharing your concept.
Well,
Michael, do we have somebody else that we want to bring on?
Yeah, let's try to bring on a caller. And
Heidi, feel free to stay on the line. You know, you could chime in on the next caller. It's not, you know, there's plenty of room on the line. So.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Heidi. Caller, are you on? Is there a new caller on the line?
Hello?
Hello, you're on there.
Doesn't sound like it. You just had somebody?
Yep, I had somebody. Well, I think that went really well with Heidi, so let's definitely encourage, you know, at least one more caller to call in at 347-945-5608.
Well, I know Tom Murphy's online, and I'm curious what he's up to, so I might put you on the spot, Tom. I don't know who else, taking a look at the other people tweeting. You know, it'd be great to sort of get get a little bit of a flow going, and you know, I know it's not it's not feasible for everybody to dial in or even to Skype in, but you know, we won't necessarily put you on the spot the way we did Heidi. Anybody else? Well. You know, Michael, while you're monitoring the lines, I could tell you guys about Steve Flick, who I saw outside of Kansas City the other day.
Okay, and in just a minute, we'll get Tom Murphy on the call in just a minute, but, you know, go ahead.
Okay. Basically, Steve started out doing remediation of federal properties that were severely contaminated, and so particularly, you know, sort of nuclear sites, activities that then, you know, there's the EPA requirements that the federal government, sort of restore whatever they've destroyed to, you know, something less destroyed. And so So Steve was working on this, and as a consequence of that experience, he became very familiar with the world of grasses, particularly the Midwest, the native Midwest grasses that the EPA required that be used in these restored areas. And so as a consequence of kind of this familiarity with that need, he started a seed company. And it's a seed company focused on grasses. And so the market kind of expanded to where he was selling to municipalities that were looking for particular strains of grasses that could grow in the median. And, you know, he relates this funny exchange with his father, who had been, you know, also a farmer and, you know, was accustomed to, you know, for anything that you're growing in agriculture, you sort of want it to be tall, and you know that's sort of the success. And for these median grasses, in fact, the objective was to have a slow-growing grass because they don't want to mow it very often. So it's got to be green and grow very slowly. So anyway, he had this very successful in the market variety that he was selling to municipalities, and his father was not impressed until he saw the amount of money he was making. Anyway, that was only the segue. So having gotten into that, now Steve has organized, and sort of fast forward, he's organized a cooperative of 612 farmers within a roughly 100-mile radius of where he's located, just to the east of Kansas City in Missouri. And what they're doing is they're taking all of the sort of remnant biomass that produce in the course of farming activities, and using it to create energy pellets. So he's actually creating an energy source that's not quite yet cost competitive with coal, but cheaper than gas. And that's essentially entirely constructed off of using wet waste biomass, and engaging farmers in this as a way to close the product cycle in agriculture. The hook, and the reason that I got I ended up finding all sorts of fascinating things about Steve's story, is that one of the forms of biomass he's using is shredded currency from the Kansas City Federal Reserve. So he actually has energy pellets that he uses to heat his own home with the wood stove that he has in his living room that I have a picture of that I'll tweet later on. And it's all driven by burning money. This is an idea that's the reason I went to talk to him is it's going to be a story that I'm going to be featuring in my next book. It's a really great story about personal progression and community building. There's a lot more to say about Steve Flick, but that's probably more than I intended to get into. So it sounds like Tom's on the line. So why don't we get to that?
We are going to bring in Tom Murphy. Tom, are you there? Hi, Tom, are you there? Tom Murphy, Tom, are you there?
Hello?
Hey, Tom.
Hi, Tom, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, I hear you, Tom. Tom, are you there? I hear you. I hear somebody saying hello. Oh, Tom's saying, okay, Tom's trying again. All right. This isn't that easy. This is not that easy. I apologize, folks. We thought we had a really great plan for the night, and it fell through. So we're scrambling noticeably.
Let's try a new caller here, Bill.
Yeah. Okay.
I think this is going to be somebody from Skype. Caller, are you on?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Is this Tim?
Yes, Tim. Hey, Marshall.
How are you?
How are you going? Yeah, good, man.
Good. Very good. So tell us, did you post a 100-word concept on Bookmeta today?
No, I haven't yet. I actually responded to someone else's 100 words right now, to Josh's 100 words. But Phil's talking about putting people on the spot, so I figured I'd go off the cuff and test out Skype.
Yeah,
yep,
this is good.
Excellent. Are you in Bolivia now?
Yeah, I'm in Bolivia. We arrived today. So it's sort of only a crazy four-day trip for a wedding on Saturday, but very short trip, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. Do you want to describe Joshua's, Tom? Is this Joshua Gross from UNC Charlotte who you commented on?
Yeah. This was so Josh, do you want me to talk about what I commented to Josh?
Why don't you, can either propose your own concept or talk a little bit about Josh's and talk about what feedback you gave him.
Oh, sure. Look, I'll start with him first. Basically, Josh's concept was starting up a cyber cafe in places with no internet services. And he talks about, how it would do that and how it would be cost effective. And obviously traveling around Bolivia and even Argentina and even sort of in Australia, remote parts of Australia, like internet access is difficult for everyone to sort of have, or it's expensive. And a couple of years ago, I'd heard about a project that I'm trying to dig up some more info on. I don't know if it's still running, but it was a internet cyber cafe project that was based on, remember the old book libraries, the buses that would go around that had, the mobile library vans?
We remember those in the States.
Yeah.
Was that in Australia where you had that?
Yeah, that as well. So this project that I heard about years ago, and I don't know what's become of it, was mobile internet internet van. So I was just suggesting to him if he'd considered a mobile option for the internet cafe, because particularly with wireless connections now, with 4G and everything getting up to speed, and the fact that it's highly visible and there's options for sponsorship and all that sort of stuff. Like there's multiple revenue streams there. There's a whole backbone of becoming essentially, almost like a digital milkman or something, where turning up into, villages again, or communities that don't have access to the internet, and just to be able to do even just basic things like pay their bills and send some emails. And from what my friend told me about this pilot project that had been done, these villages, I think it was somewhere in like the north of England or somewhere, where there's like little tiny hamlets, that people basically change their routines so that you know, they'd write out their emails like they were writing a letter, but then type out the email and send it off. And then they'd save, you know, get all their bills together and then pay all their bills online. And at the same time, the guys running it would, you know, be teaching people how to actually use to do all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more, anyway, that was my suggestion to him, feedback to him, to have to think about a mobile option rather than just having a single destination.
Well, I know we, as in, you know, Phil and my co-instructors, think, you know, Joshua is a particularly interesting case because, you know, this whole course is an experiment for us, which sometimes, like tonight, all the listeners can tell we're experimenting. And we're experimenting in higher education, just like, you know, Joshua does. And, you know, what we're doing is we're trying to take, you know, and connect, you know, entrepreneurs globally who want to study under people like Professor Oswald, and give them, you know, platforms to connect. And as much as in international sense, as I think Joshua was talking about, now, you know, clearly there are different things, but, you know, this is a particular case that I'm interested in also.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Bill?
Yeah.
Sorry,
oh, I mean, I just had a thought, you know, about tonight is that when, you know, we talk about lean startup methodology, and David Norris is going to be talking about that some next week. I am confident that we're going to have Mark Nager on from the founder of Startup Weekend. I'm hoping that he will not fall ill, but Mark is fantastic, and I expect that we'll be starting promptly with him at 7:30. You know, you can count on that discussion. But you know, one of the things about being running a lean, you know, approach to your venture, and that David tweeted a great link to the story of a failed venture, and maybe if David can call in or tweet, you know, retweet his link that he's shared with ShowView Online. But, you know, I'm sure everybody knows what I'm talking about. I'm just forgetting the particulars. But, you know, won a $25,000 prize, but then she'd really run down her expenses. She was in debt, you know, paying down the debt, trying to kind of deliver on the promise of the thing with the amount of money she brought in was more challenging than she could handle, and she ended up having to put the project on hold. You know, the point is that we're operating very close to the margin when we do this kind of thing, and what we're doing tonight and what she was doing in that project. And, you know, the issue of constantly thinking through what your plan B is, even as you're right towards the edge, is a good one to keep in mind. David just tweeted it. Thanks a lot for that, David. I think it complements what we were talking about last week with peer funding. You know, on one hand, you want to build your community, you want to focus your message on the group that's going to be best positioned to be your team as you go forward, and then go to them, and you know, like we saw with Matt Flannery's story, you know, it's a little embarrassing to go to the people you know, but those are the people that can help you. So there's that whole dimension, but then there's understanding, you know, for Matt, you know, we see the great success he's had. It all looks easy. I know from, you know, having you all read his story and also having spoken with him, there were plenty of ugly moments in that experience as well. And so, you know, so you got to be ready for both, is all I'm saying. Any other comments here for Tom? We've got 10 minutes left in our scheduled time, definitely enough time to bring somebody else on the line or to respond to some questions. You know, we can also open it up to, you know, any questions you'd have about, you know, what you've read so far, comments on what's coming up, questions about, you know, the expectations, team building, requirements, anything you want to bring in this last 10 minutes so that we can make the most of the kind of open space that that we've ended up having tonight. Michael, you there?
Yep, I'm here, Phil.
Okay, you got anybody waiting on the line?
You want to try to take one more caller?
Yeah, I think we got
right,
9 minutes.
Give it a few minutes.
We started 10 minutes late. We don't want to end 10 minutes early. we could at least keep the show going for a little bit.
Yep. Caller, are you on the line?
Me?
Yes. Hey, how are you? Who is this?
This is Josh, and I called in because I got discussed a little bit earlier, and I wanted to just drop in.
Great, Josh. So do you want to first tell us a little bit about the concept you wrote about and then respond to what Tim said about it?
Yeah, so this idea is completely stolen on my part. I was down in Haiti last year in a rural area helping with One Laptop per Child training, and through somebody who was local, three young men approached me, and they said that they wanted to start up an internet cafe, and they actually already had a business going, not what I would ever think of as a business, but it was working, which is one of the young men carried a wireless USB 3G modem around his neck and a laptop, and he was literally an internet delivery person. People would pay him for time on his computer. That's how he paid for what is in Haiti a fairly expensive service. And so he's been asking me on a regular basis for resources to help him set up an internet cafe. And I have been looking for somebody to collaborate with me because I'm not the right person. I can be on the tech side, but in terms of starting up a business, that's not my area of expertise. And the resources that I outlined in my post are the resources that were needed, which is ideally some minimal kind of water. And there are certainly parts of specifically Africa where that would not be possible, but hopefully water and energy, and then some kind of wireless internet service. So the Cyber Cafe itself wouldn't need to be connected to any services because they don't have any services. And for me, the point is not so that people can do email and Facebook, not that those are bad things, but for me, they're educational opportunities because in Haiti, the unemployment rate, the real unemployment rate is probably around 90%, and especially in rural areas. There simply aren't opportunities unless you make them. And, of course, people can't plug into great organizations like, say, Kiva without some kind of connection to the world. So, I'm very community-focused and I'm very education-focused, and that's what I wanted to get out of the idea.
What could this be a for-profit internet cafe, or would this be more of a non-profit community service?
Well, I think it should be a for-profit business in the community because, for-profit businesses tend to be self-sustaining. I mean, that's the goal, right?
Right.
Now, the problem is the startup costs are pretty significant, and that's something. But that's something where we can find resources to start up a business there.
Mm-hmm.
I believe academics were really good at begging for money. We do it professionally. So that's something that I can work on with people. Again, my area is technology. I teach computer science. I don't really know anything. I once ran a business that was just me, and somehow I managed to piss off my only employee, who was me. So I'm not qualified as it stands to run a business. Where I need help is not, though, in finding that startup capital, although it wouldn't hurt to have help with that. But I have resources I can pursue for that. The real trick for me is getting out to the field, finding the right places, and more important, finding the right people. Nepotism in the third world can be horrible, and there's a lot of abuse there because there are no systems to put a check on it. So we need authentic people, like I said, like this young man who came up to me and said, hey, this is what I want to do.
Well, we'll make you one deal that if you build the cafe and education is your focus, we'll teach a course on entrepreneurship in Haiti. I just want to make one quick point.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Hold us to that. One quick point, and then we'll take one or two questions from Twitter. And the first thing you said on the line is that you stole this idea. And my point is entrepreneurs are great at stealing ideas. Mm-hmm. We don't admit it. We don't teach this in higher ed. But when you're working at a startup, why would you ever rebuild something from scratch when somebody's already done it? You can just reinvent, mm-hmm. you know, the wheel, so to speak, to use the cliche. So, you know, we actually encourage students in our in-person class to cheat. Sorry, Phil, I just said that on the air. but let's see if we can go to Twitter. And I see it's Dr. Ross, UNCC, on Twitter. Right. And I already see some questions coming in.
Yeah, well, I can just kind of comment on a couple of them. I just looked at the telecenter from Anna Karina, and that's awesome, especially because of the focus on women, and I'm definitely going to be looking at that. Sandy Maxey, Haiti has huge, huge ecological issues, and soil is certainly one of the stars. There's massive deforestation because they have no energy. The only way they have energy is Venezuela. Is very generous with oil for them. And so I would like to do something. And one of the most important reasons, it's not that you can't get energy in Haiti. It's just that I'm really keen on green because Haiti needs massive improvements in that. And there are actually other ideas related to farming there. I've got a million ideas related, well, not a million, to Haiti. And then also to Sandy Maxey, Haiti specifically has a huge problem, which is Haiti's not cheap. There's no money there, but because all of the money is coming from the first world, almost all in terms of grants and aid and things like that, everything costs in Haiti, including decent labor, just as much as it would in the U.S. So, for example,
Josh, I'm going
soft drink.
To stop you there because we're going to run out of time. And I just want to say, you know, tonight was kind of a clutter, but the point of it was to show how many resources we have and the people taking the course. And we were able to connect a few people to comment on and to give feedback on these 100 concept sketches. This is just, you know, the tip of the iceberg of what we can do if we get involved on Bonito. And I hope that we can all, you know, continue the conversation on Twitter and Bonito and continue to provide these resources. So with that, we'll give a better call next week, and we look forward to future calls.
Yeah, thanks for sticking with us, guys. Thanks for sticking with us.